Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Julie.
We're the hosts of the Hartford Fund's Human-Centric Investing Podcast.
Every other week, we're talking with inspiring thought leaders to hear their best ideas for how you can transform your relationships with your clients.
Let's go.
Sean, welcome to the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. We're so excited to have you here with us today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, John, for the invitation. It should be a fun discussion, so I'm pumped.
Well, Sean, when we think about the topic of prospecting and networking, it's the one thing I think Julie and I would agree that most financial professionals would tell you if they just made the time to do it, it would probably be one of the most efficient things they could do in terms of return on investment, the time invested versus what it yields. And yet so many of us, you know, we're attending to the daily activities and weekly activities, and it kind of gets squeezed out. But part of that, I think, is because we just think of, you know, networking doesn't seem to have a process to it. The only process part of it, we think, is picking up the phone and calling someone. But I know you say it's different. When it comes to networking and prospecting, you put a process around it. Could you kind of give us an overview of what that looks like?
Absolutely. Yeah, John, and you're 100% correct. I mean, networking is one of those terms that people throw around, usually during goal setting, when they say, hey, you got to do a little more networking. And it's so amorphous that it's like, okay, what does that mean? I mean, what constitutes networking and what do I get out of it? So the way I've been consistently doing networking and the way I coach and teach my clients is to do it with intentionality. Networking isn't just shaking hands, getting business cards so you can have rectangular coasters all over your desk. Like there's an intentionality to it, right? And so the way I kick off that intentionality with a lot of my coaching clients is I say, when you are going to these networking events, pick one in your mind. It could be a dusty ballroom with 200 people in suits all milling about. It could be a small intimate dinner with 8 people, a couple of prospects, a couple of managers, internal networking, external networking, a PTA meeting, like you name it, right? We're out networking, building relationships all the time. When you are thinking about that event, there's a lot of work to do before the event itself to set you up for success networking at that event. Keeping in mind, of course, you're investing your time, right? And we are shrewd investors of our time. And what's the return on that time going and meeting people and, you know, sustaining organic conversation and all of that stuff, the stuff that, we push off, what's the return on it? And so what I tell people is the preparation that you do before the networking event itself is even more important than actually going to the event. And so I start with that framework, and that framework, and I talk about in my book, is I have an APQ prep guide that I created that I've used for years. And it's very simple: audience, purpose, and questions. And so before I walk into a room in which there's people I don't intimately know, and I'm tasked with creating and sustaining organic conversation and possibly finding some business connections and all of that good stuff, I want to ask myself, who's in the room? The audience is key. When I don't care what industry you're in, the audiences change and vary, event to event and situation to situation. And thinking about the audience before you walk into the room makes you realize what might they find interesting? How much talking should I be doing? How much listening should I be doing? How do I build a relationship with the people in that room and connect with them with an intentionality? What's a good first impression? Like all of those things come to fruition when you think about, all right, who's in the room. So audience is key. And then the P is purpose. I do a lot of these workshops and I do a lot of public speaking. And I always ask this question. I say, what's your purpose for being here right now? And of course, that's the one no one ever raises their hand because they're like, we don't know. I mean, a lot of times you find yourself in a room and you're like, why am I here? What was the point of this? And if you don't know, then there's no way you can convey your purpose and your importance to the people that you're meeting. So what I encourage people to do is the real purpose might be, I have no idea, or my boss told me to go to this event, or it's the coffee networking portion of a conference or whatever, right? Like, I don't know why I'm here. That could be true. But what I task people with before the event is create a unique and deliberate purpose before the event. Even if it feels contrived, even if it's something that you totally had to make up just to have a purpose, make it up before you get in there. And that way, when you are in conversations and, you know, you're at some tech event and you're going, I'm not even in this industry. Why am I here? Think of reason. Maybe you have a really close friend that just has a startup in that industry. Well, then take off your employer hat, take off whatever hat you were wearing at the time and just say, I'm here to make some connections for my buddy. Right? See if I can help him out, get some investment connections, get him, you know, some CTO support, whatever. That's my purpose for being here. So once you have that purpose and you're like, okay, that's what I'm representing today, you'll realize the next four or five conversations you get into are so much more impactful. And people know that, to borrow my favorite term from The Bachelor, they're here for the right reasons, you know, and they know that that's why you're there. And it creates a much more rich environment having a deliberate purpose. And then the last thing I'll finish with is the questions. I tell people, if you take nothing away from my prep plan, take this away. Before you walk into a room in which you're meeting new people, create two stock questions that you have in your holster that are open-ended enough to stimulate conversation, but specific enough to be interesting to the people in the room. And the reason I say that, and this goes for virtual events as well and virtual meetings, is we all have that situation where you meet somebody and you hit it off and you're like, oh, Julie, oh, do you know so-and-so? And oh, yeah. Is he still trying to, you know, is he always doing his impressions? He's still doing his impressions. Yeah. And you have a really great rapport and you start laughing and you have a good time and you hey, you just hit it off. Everything's going great. You feel it, don't you? You feel what's happening. And it happens to all of us. It's just this, like, this awkward silence, and it pulls us deeper into it. And every second feels like an eternity, and you don't know what you're going to do, and you don't know what you're going to say. And then one of us has to do it. One of us has to get rid of this awkward silence, and it's always the same thing. Someone says, did you get hit with that snow? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's really cold. And, you know, you start talking about high pressure systems and you become this awkward meteorologist all because you didn't have your two stock questions. And if you have those two stock questions, you can resuscitate any flatlined conversation. And regardless of where you are on the intro extrovert spectrum, if you can walk into a room with confidence, knowing that no conversation will die on your hands, you will be there to resuscitate and to bring back to life that awkward silence and that flatline conversation, you're sending signals to everyone that you're the most confident networker in the room. And so that little bit of prep, and there's a bunch of other stuff I won't even get into, but those are my top items in terms of networking preparation that I think is just fundamental and key that everyone should start implementing.
I think that's so interesting because I think so often we're so focused on our time in the room and, you know, preparing our statements and ourselves that we fail to think about a lot of that prep. So I think that's such good guidance. Could we talk a little bit more about that awkwardness? I think because I know that I think so many people get hung up on that part of it. What if I say the wrong thing, or I have that regret, or I leave the room and I wish I would have said something a little bit differently, or I misstated myself, you know, all of those, all that self-talk, I guess, that, you know, then you leave and you think, oh, I probably shouldn't have even gone. How do you work with your coaching clients through that awkwardness? You know, talk us through that, will you? Just to, you know, maybe get people out of their own heads. What are some tools for that to help people overcome that, especially for people that maybe are more introverted, but maybe even for people that aren't, but then are just constantly criticizing themselves and saying, oh, I should have done this differently or better or coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. And that is the biggest, the one part at, with all of my coaching clients, I say the same thing. I almost like celebrate and let's laugh at the awkward moments because this is my vocation. This is my subject matter expertise. And maybe once a week, I have some awkward networking moment that I wish I could take back. Right. And I'm a self-described expert and I constantly find myself in these situations where I go, why did I say that? I was on one earlier and I'll leave, of course, details out in case they're listening to the podcast. But there was a situation in which someone gave someone a nickname that had to do with appearance, and it wasn't like too mean. It was just like a general thing, like, oh, the person with the, you know, something about the appearance. And the person that we were talking to had the same thing, and I'll say what it was a bald head. And I as soon as I contributed to the conversation, but as soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, like that, you could feel it. It was like, oh man. And so we all talked over it, and we acted like it didn't happen. But afterward, I had a call with that individual, and we laughed through it. And I was just like, this is just how it happens. So, overarching theme here is preparation. All of the tips and techniques, all I'm trying to do is limit the severity and quantity of those awkward moments. I cannot make them impossible, right? However, one of the things, especially for introverts, that I do focus on is a couple of things. One is having an easy conversation facilitation metric in your mind, not metric, framework in your mind. And the one I always used, the one I created, was the WAVE: work, area, vacations, and entertainment. A lot of times we find awkwardness in our ability to facilitate a conversation. And that's where we start to clam up a little bit. We say things that we go, what kind of a question is that? I remember I asked the CEO when I was a little junior, and I was very nervous, and I met a CEO of a client, and I said, so how's the new gig? And the way I said it, he was a CEO of a major bank. And it's like, gig, like what is he? A band moonlighting at like the local pub gig. What a loser. And I remember getting so caught up in my head, but it's because I wasn't facilitating the conversation properly. And that's where I think a lot of confidence is bred. And I will say some of the best networkers I know are self-described introverts. They just have a really good plan for facilitation. So work, area, vacations, and entertainment. A work, very obvious, like, oh, so how long have you been doing that? You enjoy it? Again, might get you 30 seconds of conversation, probably not a lot. Area is a really easy one that a lot of us sometimes glaze over. I hit it hard. I just met you. I know, Julie, you mentioned Seattle, right? Mm-hmm. So if we had another 5 minutes to kill before we kicked off, that was where I was going to go next. How long have you been out there? Did you grow up out there? Where people grew up, where they're from, it invokes a very personal response without being, without running the risk of overstepping our boundary, right? So area is a very safe place to get people to talk about themselves. And then entertainment, it's very easy, binge watching things, NFL playoffs coming up, and whatever it might be, very easy conversation topics. V is really important. V is vacations. And this, I won't do it with you, we don't have time, but what I do in my workshops is I ask people where they've gone on vacation lately. Any good vacation plans, winter getaways, any summer vacations. And when people tell me about their recent vacation, we maybe one or two more scoping questions. And I say, you don't realize what I was doing, but by asking you if you have any vacation plans or gone on any recent trips, immediately you smile. People love to talk about their vacation plans or where they came back from. So it makes you feel good. But also that person, when they tell me about their vacation, tell me everything I need to know about their family life. And that is a big silver bullet question I think everyone should have in their holster to avoid the awkwardness of assuming something about your life and going down a conversation topic that doesn't apply to you. Because I don't know if you're married or not. I don't know if you're recently divorced. I don't know if you're trying to have kids in camp. I don't know anything about you. So by stimulating these conversation topics, while they may be innocent and innocuous, I may inadvertently be putting you in a negative mental place. And I see way too many people fall into that trap. So by asking any good vacation plans, any good trips coming up, I feel getting all of that information about someone's family life, all you're doing is green lighting safe conversation topics you can go down and then keeping others red until you find out additional information. I think that's a really, really good tip for a lot of the introverts that feel awkward facilitating 15 minutes of conversation, at the jump.
You know, Sean, as I thought about your APQ that you talked about, the audience, the purpose and the questions. You know, Julie and I and members of our team participate in hundreds of networking events. We're typically the invited guest speaker, but we see how all kinds of different financial professionals experience these events. And one thing that we always instruct people to do when they're putting together an event is have a purpose when you make the call to invite someone, right? So why is it that you thought of me to invite, unless it's just a pure social event kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But hey, I thought of you today, Sean. I remembered about you telling me about caring for your parents, right? Mm-hmm. We're having an event in a few months where we're going to get some folks together to hear some information on this. I think you'd really, really benefit from. From our standpoint, it's funny you said audience, because I will tell everyone, the most important thing for me is understanding who the audience is. Yes, who's right. In the room? Are they from the same professional background? Are they retired? Are they still working? Are they prospects? Are they current clients? Like all these questions that are in my mind, I would really stress that financial professionals think about before either designing or participating in a networking event. So I think you are dead on the money. I would just challenge our financial professionals to really think about, when we marry those two, audience and purpose, it almost seems like the questions can almost flow out of that, right? Yep. That are kind of connected to it.
Absolutely.
So I really love that APQ. It's something that will definitely stick in my mind.
Great. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And I think one of the things too that you mentioned, John, you hit on a key element of inviting individuals for a purpose. Hey, I know you mentioned your parents are getting a little bit older. Here's an event, you know, whatever. Or you mentioned that your dad is a small business owner. Here, come mm-hmm. to the small business event. What you didn't mention, the quiet undertone there, is you have that information somehow. And I think that is really key for the earlier career professionals in particular, to get that confidence to ask questions and learn about prospects, learn about their clients at a deeper level. I don't have it here to show you, but in my notebook, when I have any prospecting calls or sales calls, in the top right, I have a little box that I do, and it's just bullet points of who they are. And so, like, you know, Julie, for you, it would be like Seattle, or, you know, be, you know, up things to follow up on, like the potential family gathering, right? Like, I would have those things written there. Anything that you divulge to me that's about you, I want to put in that top right. Again, CRM systems and all that's really good for capturing that information as well. But I think all of that is really important. I know so much about my clients' teams that they support. I know, you know, where their favorite vacations, their favorite restaurants, Everett. Because if I want to invite you out to a dinner, and I know that you're a big fan of, you know, dim sum and a new dim sum place that just opened, that's the place that I'm going to select, because I know that's the important thing. So, John, what you hit on was important, is getting that information so that we can create more impactful connection points with our clients and our prospects.
So I have a question about, let's say we did all that networking stuff great. We set up a great event. One of the things I always wonder, Sean, is the host of the event stands up before the end of the event and pronounces to everyone, hey, hope you had a good time tonight. Just to let you know, we'll be following up with you in the next week. Is it a good thing to announce that to people, or is there a different way to secure follow-ups to a great networking event?
That's a great question. I mean, if it's a 2-hour event and there's 60 people in the room, it might be tough for you as the host to have direct connections with all 60 people in that time frame. That would be some speed networking that I would just love to meet that person that can pull that off. So yes, time permitting, my follow-up metrics that I look at, but the whole framework for capturing those follow-up meetings is at its very core, that's what we're here to do, right? If I met you for once and there might have been a connection there, we may have found an opportunity to work with each other, and I never followed up with you, well, then what was the point of this? Like, that was just another night I spent away from my family for no reason. Right? And so I owe it to them. I owe it to myself to follow up. And so a couple of the key elements I make sure everyone includes in their follow-up email, if they want to secure a follow-up meeting, is to first be detailed. I see this a lot where people will say, hey, John, it was so great meeting you. Hey, let's get together next time you're in the city. Let's grab coffee, you know, sometime, you know, this winter or something. And it's like, okay, I want to get on your calendar, right? I did the outreach, which means I'm coming towards you, which means I probably have something that I want to talk about or work with for you. So I'm making the first move here. And so what am I doing? I'm putting all of the homework on you now. Now, John, you have to go to your calendar. You have to find a date and time that makes sense. I'm giving you all of the homework. And so I tell people, if you want someone to say yes to a follow-up meeting, all they should have to do is say yes. They shouldn't have to pick the time, the date, the location. They should have no homework. Because if I say to you, John, are you free? I always pick like a Thursday, three Thursdays from now, 1 to 1:30 or 1 to 1:15, depending upon your schedule. Are you available this date and this time? And then I'll get to the purpose in a second. All you have to do is say yes. If it doesn't work for you, you'll say, no, unfortunately, I'm away that week, but, right? Unless you just say no, in which case I misread this completely. We never had a chance of doing work together. But more than likely than not, you're going to get the no, but. And so being very detailed, and you do the homework, is what I tell people. And if I'm doing the outreach, I tell people stay away from the Calendly links, book time with me here. That's a really good service. And it's a really good technology support tool. I want to show you the individual part of it. And so for you to click a link and find time with me, again, maybe I'm a little old school on this, but I want you to feel like there's a status thing here. I really want to get on your calendar to get you to click a link that says book time with Sean. A little bit different. I tend to stay away from that.
It almost seems like those links work when the customer wants to book time with you,
right?
That's versus exactly right. When you want time with them, right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I have a lot of coaching clients and stuff, so they use those links to find a time that is best for them, because this is a part of an ongoing thing with us. But the other tip I always include with people is to make sure that you are including that purpose. And I said, I'll get to the purpose later. When we're sending these follow-up emails, this is like in all my sales days, all the years I've been in sales, there's one slogan it was like nails on a chalkboard to me. And it was, let me buy you a cup of coffee. It was like an old school sales, but let me buy you a cup of coffee. Hey Julie, let's find time to connect. Coffee's on me. And it bothered me, the coffee doesn't bother me. Coffee is a vehicle through which you have a meeting. It's the same as breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks, whatever. That's not the problem. Problem is why. Right. Void of the why, Julie, I'm telling you that a half hour to an hour of your really important time is worth a $5.60 latte, right? Like, why? Why would you meet with me? I'm doing the outreach, which means I have a purpose. I'm just not disclosing it to you. And what I tell people is you have to include that purpose to get that meeting, even if that purpose is unrequited. And this is a big game changer for people because they have a difficult time finding a mutually beneficial purpose. Oh, Julie, let's get together. We'll love to pick your brain. About what? Why? Why? I'm so busy and you want some of my time. Why? And so what I tell people is actually step back and say, what am I hoping to gain out of this meeting? I would love to include how I can help you as well. But if that's not evident yet, just be honest and say, Julie, I know, you know, through the human-centric investment podcast, I know that you have a three other guests that I would love to get to know. Would love to maybe grab a half hour and see if you'd be comfortable making these introductions for me. Right? I need your help. And despite what you see in the news or reading the paper, people are pretty cool. And if I include the purpose in there and I'm very transparent with the ask, I mean, you have a really good chance of people giving you that time, knowing what the ask is. And so I think including all of those elements is really, really important when sending these follow-up email requests, follow-up meeting requests.
That makes so much sense. I'm curious, Sean, what was your opinion or guidance for all of those financial professionals listening that have gathered these lists of prospects from networking over many, many years, maybe even decades, right? So they have these beautiful lists and they even have notes on these individuals and maybe they've been dripping on them, but they haven't done anything with them. How do they take that list at this point after listening to what you've just said and they're inspired by your words? What would your guidance be at this point if they wanted to pull that list out and do something with it today and sort of enact change? How would you guide them to take the next step on their list of networking that they've spent a lot of nights away from their families building and cultivating over many years in the industry?
It's a great question, because that is one of the most, I think, under-discussed issues facing, let's call it client-centric professions, is this idea that I have like 1,000 friends and no clients, right? Like I have all of these friends. I have this network. I have these lists. Everyone loves lists.
All these lists.
How do I turn them into clients? Do I just send them a statement of work and like see what happens? Like, how do I go about this? And I think the reason we don't talk about it is because the main, how do I put this? I think the main apprehension is that these are friends. Like they're in a list, but I've built some friendship of some sort with them. And I don't want them to think that this ask that I'm about to make of them, which is business, presumes on the friendship. That's all this ever was a long sales cycle. And I think a lot of that, I think that's a big hurdle for a lot of us, is I don't want these friends to think that that's all this was, or that if they say no, that all of a sudden we're not friends anymore. And I think that's always a hurdle. One of the things I coach a lot of people with, when you have these lists, well, there's two things. First, more directly, I say, look, if you want to build the bridge, there's a gap between in this friendship that you want to bridge. That gap is becoming a client. Okay. To bridge that gap, you have to build the bridge first and then have them walk over it. And once they walk over it, they've established this bridge has been built. So how do we build that bridge? You all probably do this, and maybe this is just a refresher for some people, but I include this as a part of every conversation I have, is at the end of that meeting, I'll say, so how can I help you? What can I do for you? Here's an idea or two I had from that last half hour, but talk to me. What does success look like for 2025? How can I help? Who can I introduce you to? I'm eagerly trying to find ways to help you so that I built that bridge. I may not need you to walk over that bridge and help me for years. This isn't a quid pro quo thing. This is just a standing habit of mine to make sure that these friends know that at the drop of a dime, if I can help you professionally and help you become successful, I'm going to do it, because that's what it means to be a friend with me. Now, not perfect at it, but I think establishing that bridge up front, realizing making the ask is much more difficult and awkward when you haven't already done something for them, I think is key. Secondly, and this is a part that is a longer initiative. I'll say this: it's not easy, but it's a longer initiative that is really important now more than ever, which is the virtual environment, building a virtual brand. That list is great, but many of them already have advisors and already have consultants and already have support. It could be family members. And no matter how strong the friendship is, you're never going to crack that open. So making that list longer and filling the funnel from the top is also a really good strategy. And one of the best ways to go about that in 2025 is to build your virtual brand. I won't go too deep into building virtual brand, because we could talk about that for hours. What I'll say is, using LinkedIn as like your number one example, right? We're in this virtual hybrid world we're in, we're constantly pushing, right? Here's some thought leadership. Here's a new white paper. Oh, did you see the new guidance and the new guidelines, the new standards? And I'm saying it in jest, but it's all really important stuff. Don't get me wrong. Don't stop doing that. But in a world where everyone's pushing, what I encourage people to think about is, what if you created a unique environment in which you're pulling people towards you? And in LinkedIn virtual land, a lot of that is around building your virtual brand around something that is very interesting, something that's engaging or motivating, uplifting, what you all do. I you don't have to speak, you don't have to answer this, but I could imagine that hosting this podcast creates a very unique environment that pulls a lot of people towards you. Many of those people end up becoming clients or referral sources or some, you know, people that help you professionally. Creating a unique environment, no matter what it is in this virtual world, is a great way of pulling those people towards you. And Awkward Networker for me is my moniker that and brand that I've developed, that is my pull tactic. And so people discover me because of Awkward Networker. And then they go, oh, but by the way, what do you do for like a living? You know, so what do you do? And then at that point, I could take that relationship anywhere I want to go. Because like I said before, trying to get on someone's calendar is tough. If they reach out to you, well, now they've established that they're interested in whatever you're representing, and you could take those relationships anywhere you want to go. So that's why I also encourage is don't forget about that virtual component and creating a unique environment that pulls people towards you to build that list out.
Well, Sean, I think we could continue with this conversation for another hour, but unfortunately, in the world of podcasts, we're somewhat limited on time. So Julie and I want to use the last few minutes. We talked earlier about audience purpose and questions, right? So, you know, our audience are financial professionals. Our purpose on the Human-Centric Investing Podcast is not only to spread awareness or education about the topics that we interview about, but it's also about getting to know our guests a little bit better. So we have prepared some questions where if you're game, we will fire these questions out to you. We're looking for top of the mind answers so that our audience will get to know Sean Hand a little bit better in terms of the person that you are beyond the profession. So if you're game, I'll ask Julie to start our lightning round.
First of all, I am game. And second of all, kudos to you two for not providing any of these questions ahead of time. Like, I've seen this before. Where it's like, hey, here are the lightning questions for the listeners. I haven't, they didn't give them to me. So, all right, yeah, let's do it. This is legit lightning question.
So Julie, whenever you're ready.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a driver are you?
Oh, 10. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was a valet.
That's a high stress job.
Sean, when it comes to vacations, where's your favorite place in the country or the world to vacation?
The most frequent would be Ocean City, New Jersey. That's just the family destination for my whole family. So that's our reprieve. I would say, I'm going to sound so like Instagram basic with this one, but Italy, man, like Italy is just, I've been there a few times and every time I go, I discover something else I love about it. And I swear every time I'm on Instagram, there's like six people in Italy going like, oh my God, like, you know, a little cafe. And I get so jealous. So Italy.
What's the best age?
The best age for me? Like my favorite age?
Yes.
I would say because of the life stage at the time, when I was like 21 to 24, I was living in the city, dual income, no kids. I had a Phillies partial game pack. I walked to work every day. My wife and I would go to 5-star restaurants. And oh man, we had our dog, go to Seeger Dog Park. Those were a great few years.
Sean, are you a morning person or a night owl?
Night owl. I would say night owl. Yeah. I'm forced to be a morning person, with three kids. But I would say if I had my druthers, I would be a night owl.
What's the ideal outside temperature?
Oh, I mean, you know what? I was actually going to say like 65 and sunny, but I love the fall. So I would say like, you know, 55, 60. I like to golf. So like recreational golf, not work golf. I mean like high school buddies, college buddies, golf in the fall. Maybe there's football on later. That's just the best.
Excellent. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us here on the Human-Centric Investing Podcast to share your insights. And for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more, Sean has a book called That Was Awkward, 7 Secrets of an Awkward Networker. And also, he is a speaker, as he also mentioned. You can look him up on LinkedIn, Sean Hand, or email him at sean@sellbyhand.com. Again, thank you so much for sharing all of your networking insights with us today. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
I had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Hartford Funds Human-Centric Investing Podcast. If you'd like to tune in for more episodes, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or YouTube.
And if you'd like to be a guest and share your best ideas for transforming client relationships, email us at guestbooking@hartfordfunds.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Talk to you soon.
The views and opinions expressed herein are those of the guest, who is not affiliated with Hartford Funds.